Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, Caroline Ford. First of all, I just want to mention my Patreon page again. Thank you so much to people who have subscribed or become patrons. It means the world. If you want to throw a couple of euro into the Owning It tip jar every month, you can do so. And it just means that I'll be able to keep going with the podcast for as long as possible and creating content that helps people manage their anxiety. This week on the show, I'm so happy to be joined by Annette Kelly, who you'll probably know more so as Little Penny Thoughts on Instagram and Facebook. She's from the North. She's from Tyrone. She's the sweetest little thing. She has the most divine accent. I could listen to her all day, and we have a really, really lovely conversation about her experience of anxiety and the power of self-talk. So she's all about words and language and the power of what you say to yourself and the quality of your thoughts and how much your anxiety can stem from that. And for her, that was really at the core of her anxiety, was how she spoke to herself and what she believed about herself and what she thought about herself. So I got a lot from this episode. I think it's really important to consider the importance of your self-talk. It's not something to roll your eyes at. It's huge. And I hope that you find this helpful. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am thrilled finally to have had the chance and the time to sit down with Annette Kelly of Little Penny Thoughts. Annette, welcome to Owning It.
Thank you so much for having me, Carly.
And thank you for making the journey down to Dublin. We're sitting here in my living room hoping that Bear, the dog, will behave. He's in the kitchen. He's had a good walk, so I'm hoping he'll just chill out now so we can have a good chat.
He's very cute.
He's very cute. So we met back in January.
Which
feels like 5 minutes ago in some ways, at the BO event up in the North.
Yes, I'll never forget it. It was a great day, and I can remember you were wearing a lovely red outfit.
I looked like I worked for Emirates that day. It was a terrible, terrible outfit choice.
I loved it because you were beside me on the panel discussion, and I can remember thinking, I'll really get on with this girl. She's good crack.
Thanks. I loved your whole vibe and your message straight away, and then obviously followed you on Instagram, and every day it's a source of just a little reminder that, you know, you've got this, you're okay, we're all in it together, we're all feeling it together.
Yeah, I suppose a big driving force behind Little Penny Thoughts is to help people to see their own worth and maybe to stop being so hard on themselves. I know that we can be quite hard on ourselves and we can be our own worst critic. At times I know I am, and every day I work to silence that inner critic. So doesn't take over.
Yeah, I think that's just such a massive driver of anxiety. I mean, whatever about specific circumstance, like a job that's not making someone happy, or perhaps that they've gone through something in their life, but I think that inner oppressor or critic that we all have in every walk of life seems to be the anxious voice in our head saying we're not good enough, or we can't do this, or the one that's trying to hold us back.
Without a doubt, sometimes we can really get in our own way. And it's not, you know, the outside voice or what other people
say.
It's the inner voice. And I suppose growing up, I didn't have that inner voice. I'll just tell you a wee bit about my childhood.
Yeah, what inspired Little Penny Thoughts?
Yeah, so I grew up in rural County Tyrone in a little place called Carrickmore. And very happy childhood growing up. At secondary school, had a blast at college as well, up at St Mary's University. And then I went travelling. And it was only really when I hit my mid-20s, I'm 30 now, by the way, my 30th year, hard to believe, but when I hit my mid-20s, I maybe lost my sense of self. I felt as if I didn't have a purpose, maybe I didn't belong. I didn't have this, I don't look like that. I started feeling very inadequate about me and my life. And that the feelings that I was feeling there were so unnatural to me, because I was always a very happy-go-lucky person. But I do think that in your 20s can be a very, you know, strange time in terms of, you know, self-discovery.
But yeah, you're becoming an adult, but you still feel a lot like a scared child.
Without a doubt. And, you know, I felt very protected at school, university, even travelling. Just, you know, that I did have a lot of fun in life. And then when I came home, I felt that, you know, from my travels, I thought, right, I need to get my shit together, so to say. Can I say that?
Yeah, I'm always
so, you know, getting everything together and, you know, I should have this, I should have that. And, you know, it was all just, I was berating myself and really running myself down. In the meantime, yeah, back to your question about where did little panic thoughts come from. I've always had a love of quotes, and I would have shared them on my personal Facebook page. And then I may have got an honest friend ringing me being like, are you okay?
You okay, hon?
Like, what is that spiel about? Yeah. Who did that? Or who said that? Or what? Has something happened? And I'm like, no, everything's grand. I just like that quote. And, you know, I just thought I'd pump it out. But it was never really specific to what was going on in my life.
Okay.
They were just, you know, quotes. Quotes with meaning. I don't really do generic quotes or cheesy quotes. I try my best to steer away from them. I always try and put out a quote with meaning. Maybe not so at the start, but definitely now I'm choosy with my quotes.
And are the quotes that you're putting out there a combination of quotes that have been around for years and your own quotes? Yep.
Well, initially in 2015 from my bedroom, I was pumping out just any quote that inspired me. You name it, Bob Marley, Ellen DeGeneres, Gandhi. There was such a wide range of quotes that, you know, resonated with me, and I would have put them up. But little panic thoughts actually came from my sister's purse. So I wanted to create a positivity page online, and my sister, being my sister, and she's now the co-founder of Little Panic Thoughts, she was like, all right, and she supported me in my weird and wonderful idea. And I said, I don't know what I'm going to name it. And then her purse was sitting in front of me, and it said, a penny for your thoughts.
Oh, wow.
So then I thought, right, penny thoughts. And Orla says, throw little into it, and has a ring to it. Then Orla, she's a graphic designer and now the creative director of Little Penny Thoughts, the company. And she created a logo, and that's our logo to this very day. So it's like a cloud, and with our script text in the middle of it. And I love it, and it'll always be our logo because it's such significant meaning.
So you kind of had to lose your way to find your purpose.
Without a doubt. It was during them times when I was setting up Little Panny Thoughts, or not even setting it up, just open up a Facebook page, that I would have said I was very lost, and maybe words were my source of comfort. And I know words can hurt or words can heal, and I'm all about the words, the healing words, so to say, the words you say to yourself, and indeed the words you say to others. But I know when someone can say something to you and it mightn't resonate, but you could read something and it totally resonates or doesn't.
Yeah, it kind of creates, for me, with a quote. And I mean, I have a chapter in my first book that's dedicated to, you know, to quotes that are, just give you a little pause for reflection. And they kind of, I think because someone's not saying it to you, it kind of sinks in a little bit, it registers a little bit slower. Maybe you've got time to kind of process it. Do you find that?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. It's just, and as I say, the beauty of quotes, it's open to interpretation. So the quotes I pump out on an online daily basis, some people might agree with it, and some people may not. And,
yeah, so you're never going to please everyone.
You know, that's it. You're not going to please everyone. And the term, you know, a penny for your thoughts, you know, your thought process was a big trigger for my anxiety back in 2016, when it really came to the fore, when I, so to say, owned it.
Yeah.
And I actually says, do you know what? I actually have anxiety. You know, I was actually diagnosed, which I didn't want the label, you know, and I still don't want the label, but I still own it in terms of, yes, that was a part of my life and probably will be a part of my life, because we can all slip into anxious periods, or even anxious days or hours, but it's I've now learned to train my brain through cognitive behaviour therapy not to fall into a rut like that turns into a week, a month, and you know, no long term. I can kind of, you know, get myself out of it, self-help, but not at the start, not when it was a foreign feeling to me. And I describe it to people that has never experienced anxiety. It's like a foreign feeling that you don't want there, and you're trying desperately to get it out. But when you don't know, you know, you, in your book you said about assessing, you know, what the F is this?
Yeah.
It's at the start I was totally shocked, because previous to suffering from anxiety, life was hunky-dory.
So you couldn't find a good enough reason to justify the anxiety that you were feeling in your mid-20s?
There was no reason, like, as in trauma-wise, so therefore I would have hid it a lot and felt guilty for feeling like that, because I had it good, I had great friends, great family, a good job, I was a teacher.
How did it manifest for you?
My anxiety? Through isolating myself more, not talking about my feelings, in terms of I would only talk about good things. You know, I just wanted to be the height of crack in the life and soul of the party. I was a bit of the class clown. But when I was feeling like this, I didn't want to socialise with people, so I would have definitely would have hid away.
And how did it feel? How did the anxiety affect you physically?
Oh, without a doubt. Weight loss. And then the funny thing about that is, when you lost weight, people were saying, "You look so good."
Yeah.
And I look back at those days when I was maybe, you know, 7.5 stone, and look at my eyes, and I can see a very unhappy wee girl. But yet, you might have got all these likes on your personal profile saying, "You look so well." And that's why I never comment on people's looks now. I always, "How do you feel?"
That's, you know, more important.
Or I never say, "You look good."
Yeah.
Looking good and feeling good is two different things.
Absolutely. I mean, I used to find that so frustrating, in that, you know, when there wasn't enough awareness about mental health, and when I wasn't really talking about it, and when I started to kind of broach the topic with people, "I'm sure you look fine. And what have you got to be, you know, you look, your eyes are healthy, your eyes are bright," whatever. I'm like, you can't fucking see anxiety. I mean, you can sometimes at a certain point. I don't know. Yes. I also lost a lot of weight. But yeah, you're dead right to, if you're going to comment on something or ask someone about something, how do you feel, not you look a certain way, because it could be anything, really.
And that's it. And that, you know, it's, you know, going through anxiety has taught me so much about myself, and so much, you know, it's given me a lot of compassion even for other people, because, you know, everyone's going through something. Or, you know, and it's, you know, I love that quote that everyone you meet is facing a battle that you know nothing about.
Yeah.
So just don't be a dick. You know, I'm trying to find the words.
No, I was going to say things, but I think she'll probably say something more profound.
No, I was trying to be more profound. Sometimes, you know, people was like, you know, about World Kindness Day, and I was like, yeah, well, I'm just going to say it's don't be a dick day, you know. And every day you should make that, but even to yourself, I'm not even talking about to others. See, when you're a wee bit kind to yourself and being a wee bit more dead on to yourself, you automatically become a nicer person to others.
Yeah.
I deliver workshops, and they're very informal, and they're full of crack, but people get something from it. So I hear, and I hope also. But the main thing is, I try to, you know, speak about is becoming your own wee best friend, as cheesy as that sounds.
And it is something that sounds cheesy, and people probably rubbish it and say, "Oh, if only I could just be my best friend." But I did a special episode on self-compassion, and what always makes a difference for me, and maybe why, you know, things like positive affirmations is something that I'm open to, is because of how it actually affects our bodies at a biological level. And being compassionate with yourself and being your own best friend is not just about kumbaya or anything. It's about it's actually calming down the cortisol. And I sound like a broken record about this, but
it's so important.
It's not just a nice idea.
It's not a quote in the wall.
No.
It's not a cliche, you know, "You've got this," quote in the wall, "Be your own best mate." It's actually because you wake up in the morning, you're with yourself and your thoughts. You go to bed at night, you're with yourself and your thoughts. You might as well, you know, you're kind of stuck with yourself, so to speak, but you might as well enjoy your own company, you know, and that all relates back to the quality of your thoughts. And if your quality of your thoughts are, you know, negative, or if you're really running yourself down, you have to check in with yourself and take steps in order to pull them negative thoughts out. Look at them and see if there's any evidence to back up what you're saying, exactly. Such as you're not good enough, you won't get that job, he doesn't like you, she doesn't like you, all that negative self-talk that can create anxiety in your world. That's where my anxiety stemmed from, was my negative self-talk.
And why do you think you were speaking so negatively to yourself? I mean, I know we all do it, but was there anything that you now look back and can make sense of at that time in your life? Like, what were the thoughts in your head?
Probably people-pleasing, wanting to please everybody, not wanting to offend anyone, you know, totally neglecting my self-care. Being a yes woman, I still find it hard to say no. But back then I was everywhere but the crib, you know. I was like, yes, 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 you know. And whereas now I know that if I'm asked to do something, I think, right, is this going to bring me peace or pressure? So maybe it was a very hectic time in my life.
And when you're trying to figure out what you were going to do.
Work-life balance. And even, you know, as a teacher, as much as I love teaching, I never felt like a good enough teacher for my wee pupils. And I was good enough. I was more.
Where do you think that comes from?
Wanting to be the best you can be. Perfectionism.
Yeah, and imposter syndrome.
Imposter syndrome. So wanting to, you know, do the best, be the best, but not actually thinking that, you know, Annette, you've done your best and that's all you can do. Teaching for me was very much a chasing your tail game. I never really got job satisfaction, you know. I never got the Friday feeling because I always would have took my work home with me, and that was a reflection on my mindset and my lack of knowledge on, you know, the importance of work-life balance. So I would say that a burnout would have been a big trigger for maybe anxiety as well. And actually, just speaking here about it today, it's not often I speak about it on my platform, because for the simple reason being sometimes I feel vulnerable, but podcasts like this are a perfect opportunity to talk about it, to create a wee bit of awareness for those that don't know what anxiety is like, but also for those who are maybe going through it. And
do you think with your platform now, because people are coming to you for inspiration and for the feeling of being uplifted, are you in a roundabout way back to putting pressure on yourself not to be vulnerable in order to satisfy your new role?
Yes and no. With Little Penny Thoughts, it's not really a persona, it's okay. A brand.
Okay, so it's not you.
It's not me. Yeah. People would call me Penny and I'm like, oh no. No, I'm still Annette. Little Penny Thoughts is very much a brand. We do positivity merchandise, such as calendars and diaries. And then me, my personal work is a personal development coach, which I'm studying my diploma at the minute over with the Coaching Academy in London, which I love. So I found my niche. I don't give advice online. I believe it's, for me, it's unethical. If someone comes to me for advice through an Instagram page, I can't, you know, you don't know anything about their history and things like that. In order, you'd be doing yourself a disservice and them a disservice if you were to give out advice online. And I also encourage people, I get a lot of vulnerable people contacting me. I would also encourage them to go through the professional route, you know, your GP. And, you know, my route was GP and then on to cognitive behaviour therapy. So I would encourage people to go down that route if it's extreme.
Yeah, so to go back to that phase for you, I'm just interested in teasing that apart a bit more. Were you coping but just feeling not great, or did you get, like we said, burnout? Did you get to a point where it started to really impact your getting up and going around about your day, and then that brought you to the doctor?
Well, no, it would have been a total burnout. It was, you know, front, nothing's wrong, you know, keep up appearances on it, and then the mask slips, and then that would have
been. Do you remember the day that happened?
Yes, I can remember the day that it happened. It was actually in the classroom that things just, you know, I started to zone out, and that's when I needed to be, you know, that's when I knew that I needed to take time off work and, you know, going in and talking to your principal about that when they wouldn't even realise was very hard for me and probably a shock.
Because you hadn't even admitted it to yourself, let alone trying to explain it to your boss.
Absolutely not. When, you know, so a panic attack would have happened. And okay.
How did that feel?
Just outer body experience. Just very much, I can't even explain it. It was just so strange and very scary. Like, you've lost control. Everything's happening around you, but you've lost your breath and breathing.
And was it scary? For me, like, I always say the big fear for me was, it wasn't, oh, I feel like I'm having a heart attack, and then being told, no, you're not, you're fine. It was like, why am I having this for no reason then? I was afraid of the fear, and I was afraid that I was capable of getting to that point where I was sort of starting to shut down and break down and have these panic attacks. I mean, did you feel that way as well?
Well, definitely. I felt, you know, I wanted to control it, and I couldn't control it, and that did create a lot of fear, and, you know, would have added to anxiety. It was only when I actually took time off work that I don't even know during that first, you know, period whether I did get better as such, because I felt guilty for being off work. And I felt also ashamed.
Yeah.
And that.
Did you say to your principal when you first went to say you need a bit of time?
Just that was back 4 years ago, and I was very much not owning it. That I needed time off. Didn't feel too well. You know, but we'd have never have said the words, just maybe we'd have put it down to a physical symptom.
Yeah, something that isn't your fault.
Oh, so yes, so I just don't feel well, you know, I need a wee bit of time off. Maybe it's a virus. Whereas now, if that was happening to me now, and I have the knowledge, I would be saying exactly, you know, how I feel, you know, stressed, anxious, you know. I don't even say this saying, oh, you're not yourself. That irks me a wee bit, because what is yourself?
Yeah.
You know, you have to be honest with your, and every, what I love to tell people is that every emotion is valid. You know, whether it's sadness, whether it's happiness, pain.
It's still you. Because we have a whole plethora of emotions that we can experience.
Well, this is it.
Not just your happy bits.
I just thought back in the day, when I, you know, pre maybe going through anxiety and depression, I would have very much wanted one emotion and one emotion only, and that was happiness. But not just happiness as in, you know, contentment. It was like I always wanted to be elated and happy, and was always a wee bit hyper. Whereas now I like crave emotion, or not emotion, sorry, I crave contentment. That's what I want.
Well, it's funny, actually, I'm in the middle of writing a chapter for my third book about our pursuit of happiness, and how really when we talk about wanting to achieve happiness and have more of it in our lives, we're really talking about contentment, because happiness is, it's such a fleeting, you know, spike of happiness. We can all experience these moments of elation or joy, but we all go back to a resting point, and it's called hedonistic adaptation.
Okay.
Where we, you know, we think if we win the lotto, or we think if, you know, if I get to this thing, I'll be happy. And it goes the same way for when something bad happens to you. You experience a high and you settle back. You adapt always. So you always go back to that level. And that level is where you want to feel contentment.
Yeah.
And that's what you want to fortify and nurture and cherish. Not be seeking these moments of constant happiness. It's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable, because when there comes a high, you know, there's a low. Yeah. I perform a lot on the stage. You know, I would, from a young year, I would have loved, you know, my parts and plays and stuff like that. But see that adrenaline rush on the stage, I just loved that.
Really?
And I would love to bottle it. Now, I mean, that was, you know, years ago. Whereas now, as I can perform on the stage and leave it there.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't crave it. I don't crave my next high as such, or adrenaline. And I'm lucky that I never, you know, didn't, you know, self-soothe through drugs or alcohol as well. And I really believe that would have helped me on my path. And I never say of recovery.
I know, because it's just coping in life.
And it's not even, you know, I beat this or I beat that. It's literally just saying, I experienced this.
And now, you know, you own it.
And now I accept it and own it, and can talk about it, as uncomfortable sometimes that makes me feel.
Why does it make you feel uncomfortable?
Probably because it's a place I don't want to revisit.
Me too. Yeah, I mean, it's like a fear that it'll come back and get you.
That's it, you know. But I know with that, with the platform online, you know, if I can help, it's not even awareness. There's lots of awareness happening. Just if I can open up the conversation and continue the open conversations that is happening throughout Ireland at the minute, I want to be part of that.
Mm.
You know, breaking the stigma, talking about emotions, because years ago, you can't say that, or you shouldn't say that. And I did, you know.
What did your friends say when you eventually started telling them? Were they like, oh, me too? Or did you feel very, because I mean, I definitely felt like I was the only person in the world, and everyone else looked and seemed fine, which I know was part of the problem.
My friends were shocked that, you know, I was going through this. Would have been different, you know, of comments saying, you never think that you would get that or suffer from this. And, you know, and my friends are amazing, and they've stuck through me through thick and thin, through the highs and lows, and are massive supporters of what I'm doing at the minute. Definitely very surprised. But at that time, I wanted to keep it hush-hush. You know, I wanted to let them know that, you know, if I'm not answering the phone or not going out with you, please don't take offence.
Exactly.
You know, whereas, you know, for the public, you know, as a teacher,
mm-hmm.
you know, I didn't want to be seen as, you know, anything being wrong, in inverted commas, and there was nothing wrong. It was just something that I was going through that many people do as well. For me, a lot of it was guilt. I shouldn't feel like this because I have a good life.
The word shouldn't.
Shouldn't. Yeah. So I've eliminated the word shouldn't.
Have you? How did you get to that point?
Probably through a lot of self-acceptance and self-discovery about how the negative connotation of the word shouldn't. You know, it can be so debilitating when you think that, oh, you shouldn't do this, or you shouldn't do that, or you shouldn't feel like that, especially in terms of feelings. Now, the way I feel is the way I feel. There's no should, could, or would, but there is a way through the feelings, especially if they are unpleasant.
Mm.
And even it's not even as black or white as a positive feeling or a negative feeling, because things are going to happen to you in life. And, you know, another quote coming at you here is that life is 10% of what happens to you, and 90% how you react to it. Mm. So I would work a lot on my, you know, reaction.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
To things.
And was, you mentioned earlier cognitive behavioural therapy. Would you credit that as being one of the major, I guess, sources of getting to a point where you're owning it, where that you could understand the impact of self-talk and the impact of your thoughts and how they influence your behaviours and your feelings?
For me, and, you know, personally, CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy, was a lifeline for me. Also, my therapist was amazing, you know, and I will definitely, you know, I look back and I think of my first few sessions with her, how reluctant I was to be there, because I was made go. This wasn't a choice.
You didn't want to address it.
I didn't want to, because I wasn't on the acceptance stage of that I was even going through this, but I have a very supportive family that clubbed together, and they made sure that I went. And then I started to actually engage with the lady, and her name's Kiarn. Hello, Kiarn, if you're listening.
I love how you speak. Kiarn.
So, and she just took me on a journey of, even, don't even like that word, journey, took me on a process of writing at what, how are you speaking to yourself? Because that was the root cause of all my fear and anxiety, was actually my self-talk. You know, nothing was being said to me. It was all inward, in my own thoughts. And she helped me to pull out those thoughts, write them down, look at them, and was there any evidence to back them up? And if there is, okay. But if there's not, then where is this coming from? So she helped me so much to rationalize my thinking, and also help, like, you know, paranoid thoughts, you know, even of what other people are saying about you. You can't control that.
Catastrophic thinking and worst case scenario thinking. And
catastrophizing was my big thing. You know, what if, you know, this is going to happen. And she just helped me retrain my brain. Like, actually get, you know, skills. And it did take work. There was no...
That's the thing. I mean, because it is... I've written about this and talked about it a lot. And it sounds like as simple as writing your thoughts down and saying, okay, you're bullshit, so I'm not going to accept you anymore. And if only it was that easy. It takes a long time. Your brain is so used to going down those neural pathways of saying this to yourself and believing this to yourself, and it going to that point of worst case scenario, that it takes a long time to carve out a new pathway which says and believes and accepts, maybe this isn't the way I need to be thinking. Maybe I am good enough. Maybe this is, maybe it will work out okay. That takes a long time and constant effort.
And, you know, it was effort, and it wasn't easy, but, you know, for the long run, it's benefited me so much, because I wasn't going back. You know, there was nothing that couldn't be helped with my situation. You know, as I say, it was very situational. You know, it didn't stem from trauma or abuse. You know, it was...
It sounds like it really was generated by your own internal voice and self-talk.
100%. That's why I'm so passionate now about, you know, even... You know, becoming, I didn't want to be a therapist, but I knew I wanted to help people.
Yeah.
And being a therapist and a coach are two different things. They're two different worlds apart. You know, a coach is someone that helps people, you know, set goals and, you know, meet goals. And, you know, my goal setting for people is, you know, confidence and building a more positive mindset in their world. Whereas therapy is a different skill.
So if anyone's listening and their self-talk is just, I mean, you know, in the gutter, own worst enemy, things you'd say to yourself that you'd never dream of saying to someone else, where should they start with trying to change that?
Well, it would be monitoring them thoughts, and, you know, because sometimes, you know, I still would talk to myself in a negative way, because it's natural, but if it's not,
you catch yourself.
You know, you can't. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going on to now is, you know, catching them thoughts. Okay, so especially if they're negative towards yourself, challenging them, thinking, is it true or is it false? Is this all in my head? And then if it is, change them, and that can be derived from not just running yourself down, even, you know, catastrophizing scenarios, thinking that, you know, something's wrong. You know, catch that feeling, challenge it to see if you've any evidence or truth in this statement, and then change it to what you know.
I find it helps to, I mean, people always sort of think you have to not think this way or not have those thoughts pop up or say those things to yourself. But sometimes, I mean, they're going to come and they're going to happen anyway. But you can choose whether or not you want to accept the narrative that your brain is giving you. And maybe, like you said there, you could be run down. There could be a whole host of vulnerability factors that are contributing to this narrative that's coming at you. Maybe you've got a period, if you're a woman.
Exactly.
Maybe you've just got too much on. Maybe you're just physically under the weather. Or maybe you just have a history of just being very, very hard on yourself.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and I think you need to distinguish between what your brain is telling you and what is... reality. And that's so hard.
That's really hard. It's really hard. And, you know, we're bombarded every day with insight into other people's world.
Yeah.
And that can add to feelings of inadequacy as well. We have so much access into other people's world, especially if you're on social media. You can see what people are eating for their breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
You can see what car they drive, the holidays are going, the jobs are in, the relationships they have. And then you start to play the compare game, and it's the most dangerous game in the world. Comparison is a thief of joy. You know, I live by that. You know, you will never be anyone else, and no one else will be you. And Kurt Cobain also said, wanting to be someone else is, you know, a waste of time.
Mm.
Because you're never going to be anybody else, and you have to kind of own your own self, own your quirks, your, and how, you know, you're perfectly imperfect.
Mm.
And I think for me, I don't look into other people's lives and wish I was them, because that's never going to happen. Do you feel, Caroline, even online, that you can be, even in our industry, you know, kind of the well-being,
mm.
and, you know, I know you're in, you know, books and authors, would you sometimes even compare
yourself? Oh my god, I'm the worst for it.
Yeah.
I've actually taken such extreme measures as to curate my feed to such an extent that it's not that I don't want to see from people that I like or that are my friends. I just,
yeah.
The tendency to compare or put yourself down is mm-hmm. so likely with me that I don't even want to see anything that could potentially allow me to compare.
Yeah.
So I just follow things that are completely nothing to do with me, or, you know, like my feed is just a combination of nice, like uplifting, like your quotes, gossip from America that has nothing to do with my reality. Social comparison.
You're focusing on your own lane and your own grass.
Yeah, but social comparison is definitely a big driver of anxiety for me. So I'm trying really hard to work on, you know, the truth that, and this is another focus of my next book, is that mm-hmm. someone else's success doesn't take from yours. And it's true, but it's very hard to believe, because we're kind of programmed to think that there's scarcity of opportunities, and you know, if someone's doing really well, that, oh, I've lost out. And it's just not, it's a kind of an evolutionary survival thing I've kind of been reading about. So social comparison is going to happen. It always has happened. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a driver of anxiety. So you need to work on, I guess, the belief that someone else's success takes from yours, but at the same time, limit or take yourself, I mean, just spending less time on the phone is really important.
Like time, you know, I would have stopped, you know, scrolling in the morning times. I used to go for a scroll-a-thon.
Yeah, before you even, like, brush your teeth.
You know, that's it. And I was inviting so many, you know, people into my room before my feet even hit the floor. So now I don't do it, because I, you know, I'm big into my morning routine.
What is your morning routine now?
So my morning routine is very simple. You know, because I, you know, I'm self-employed now, I am my own boss, and, you know, every day varies, but that doesn't mean that I lie on mm-hmm. in bed, because lying on doesn't give me energy. I used to think it did in the past, but now, you know, I'm very much get up, get out, get at it, even if you don't have anything planned that day. And usually, you know, I'm lucky enough that I do, however, you know, I make things happen, you know. But in the morning times, I would get up and I would, you know, do all the things, you know,
cleanse, moisturize.
No, I'm only joking. I'm not that perfect person. I would brush my teeth, wash my face. Then breakfast is a big thing for me, and breakfast, I just there's something about, you know, going for breakfast is lovely, but now sometimes I like to make my own breakfast. It just varies, but eating in the morning has now become a massive part of my morning routine, whether I, you know, eat out, you know, do work at a local cafe, or whether I cook for myself.
And at this point, you're still not looking at your phone. You're giving, this is you time, if you can manage.
Not social media, emails, maybe, okay. You know, if it's work related.
Yeah.
But I'm still not trying my very best to stay away. Like, I've took off notifications on my phone, so I'm not, you know, tempted, you know, to look at social media.
How is your self-talk these days?
My self-talk would be pretty positive, you know, in terms of, you know, you're doing the best you can.
What do you believe about yourself now?
Oh, that's probably the toughest question. What do I believe about myself? In what way?
Like, what kind of beliefs would you have been feeding yourself that you now have disputed and believe, and that you're not afraid to say? I mean, obviously, look, it's more important that you say it to yourself. Yes. You don't necessarily need to say to the whole world that you think you're fantastic, but it's really important that you believe it yourself. So how have those beliefs changed?
Well, now I believe I have a purpose. I believe I have a message. and I believe in my own self-worth, and it doesn't come from anybody else but me. You know, the whole concept of, you know, my workshops are wellness from within. So I believe that wellness does come from within, and the only way that I can, you know, become well or be well is from within inside of me, and the choices I make, the things I tell myself, and the actions I take. That sounds very philosophical, doesn't it?
I like it. Write that down. What are you most proud of with yourself? And the I know we hate the word journey, but the process you've been on. The path.
I suppose the journey and the path, we're all on one. I'm probably most proud of creating the platform of Little Penny Thoughts, and how maybe it's not only helping me on a daily basis, but lots of people from over the world. I get lots of messages of people just saying simply, I needed to hear that quote today. And sometimes that's enough for me, because you don't know what someone's going through, and maybe them words help them to maybe anchor them or give them a wee bit of strength. Once again, I believe in the power of words and the power of the written word as well. And, you know, I really appreciate how people sometimes get back to me and say that. I'm not claiming to be Mother Teresa, you know, far from it. But I'm most proud of that maybe I'm making a difference.
Mm.
People tell me every day that in my own wee way I make a difference. And I like to sometimes shun up and be like, not a bit. But then when you sit back and think of the feedback you're getting, or, you know, it's very humbling, and I'm extremely grateful for it. And also the wonderful opportunities that Little Penny Thoughts has presented. I wouldn't be sitting here, you know, if not, and I wouldn't be getting to speak all around Ireland and the UK as well. And I love that, you know, I love sharing my message with others, opening the conversation around mental health and well-being, and just, you know, doing my best.
And you are doing your best, and you're doing an incredible job. And it's amazing. I mean, I feel this too, where it's amazing to know that you've made even a little bit of difference in someone's life. But yeah, where you have to be careful then is that when you see yourself as a person that people are turning to,
mm-hmm,
that you still put the oxygen mask on yourself first every time.
Definitely.
So as much as you have done so well to spread your message, and, you know, you have to still watch your energy output and your energy, mm-hmm, input. And so how are you looking after yourself now? How do you keep your anxiety from resurfacing? Yes,
so self-care is the best care. It's not selfish, it's essential. So I would communicate daily to the people that I love, you know, keep, you know, very much talk to my friends, talk to my family, keep in touch, you know, coffee dates, you know, socializing. That's a big thing for me, because, mm, you know, it can be, when you're on this journey, sometimes it can be, you know, a wee bit lonely at times.
Yeah, God, I am so sick of my own company writing this book.
Yes, and, you know, sometimes you miss maybe the workplace environment. Yeah. And I do work alongside my sister, and that's lovely too. But in terms of the whole keeping anxiety at bay, you know, self-care, so that's, you know, your social element. I'm not even going to say exercise, but movement for me is key. Getting out in nature, walking, you know, hikes, things like that. You know, I couldn't recommend more. And especially this year, I really, you know, embrace that, mm-hmm, you know, that the importance of movement and, you know, exercise as and when I can.
And are you good now at recognizing the signs before it kind of comes to you, saying, look, I can feel that I'm going down the route of feeling a little bit overwhelmed again, I'm going to take a step back? Are you allowing yourself the chance to do that?
Probably, you know, sometimes it just happens, you know. I would say I still struggle to say no to certain things. So sometimes, you know, events or, you know, talks can happen, and then everything can come on top of you, and all of a sudden you're feeling, you know, a heightened sense of, mm-hmm, anxiety, but it's only temporary.
It's just overwhelmed.
Yeah, that's definitely, it's just a wee bit overwhelmed. But I know to make sure to try and give yourself time and space and days off,
mm-hmm,
because it's very easy not to take a day off.
And to do it without the guilt.
That's it, do it without the guilt, and not feel as if you're not, you know, see this whole, you know, grafting and grinding and hustle, it doesn't wash with me.
No.
You know, it doesn't wash me. You can do things, a lot of things can be accomplished with little fuss, and, you know, you don't have to work, you know, all the hours that are sent to you. You know, you have to separate, you have to get a work-life balance. Do I have it? Absolutely not. I'm striving to. Mm-hmm. Some weeks are hectic, some weeks are that wee bit quieter, but I'm just trying to get the balance. But that's my aim for, you know, 2020.
I also feel, though, with the kind of work that you and I do, a balance which is based on, you know, X amount of hours working, X amount of hours not, is probably unrealistic. So I remember I interviewed this amazing woman called Wendy, who works at LinkedIn, who put the idea in my head of, because also she was like, it's not happening, work-life balance is not happening, work-life blending.
Oh, I like it. Work-life blending.
So it's like, you know, you're going to be doing some work maybe at 10 p.m. at night, or maybe you're going to be having a nap at 2 o'clock in the day. It's about easing in and out and, you know, having that adaptability, that flexibility, and kind of owning that as well. Which, you know, because I'm never going to sit there for 8 hours and then just do nothing. And sometimes it just comes to me in the evening where I'm like, yes, I need to do this thing. So it's blending, not balance.
Yes, I like that. Mm. I've never heard of that term before. So thank you, Wendy and Kearney. I think also about the work-life balance, a lot of things that I would attend are social. Mm-hmm. Social things, and, you know, that can be lovely as well. But back in the day, like, I literally, Kearney, would have went to the opening of an envelope. I would have been there. But now I don't think that I don't put myself under pressure to be sociable all the time.
Yeah, you have to value your time.
And I love my own space, my own company as well, as sociable as I am. Can you be like an introvert and an extrovert?
Yes, you know you can. It's an ambivert.
I'm an ambivert.
I think everyone who I've spoken to on this podcast has been an ambivert without realising.
I'm an ambivert. That is me, because, you know, I'm definitely an extrovert, you know, I'm very sociable, but I love my own time.
You charge inwardly and then you take that energy and you put it out.
Yeah, definitely.
And is there a mantra or a quote of all the quotes that you've put out there that you've come across that you have plastered on your walls or that you live by, you remind yourself of every day?
Pressure's for tires. So just, I don't put myself under pressure. I don't let anyone else put me under pressure. I just don't think pressure is for people. Some people work well under pressure. Maybe I used to, but not now. I'm all about, you know, pacing everything in terms of work. But even my personal life, you know, not a pressure to meet the one. Not a pressure to be married by a certain age. Not a pressure to have children by a certain age. I eliminate that, you know, maybe societal pressure that can be projected upon maybe a woman of 30. I also don't put pressure on myself with social media, trying to be someone I'm not. The last thing I want to be seen is this positive Penny every day, when I'm most certainly not.
You're Annette.
I'm Annette, and I'm Annette. But even, I'm not always positive as Annette, you know. I'm very much, I want to be as real and transparent as possible.
Yeah, I think just being authentic. So, it's not positive or negative, it's authentic.
Just being.
And that's the most valuable currency, I think, these days. It'll get you far, it'll serve you well, it'll make you happy, it'll help you sleep, it will bring you to your purpose, and it will, you know, I just think authenticity
I think there's a lot of, you know, there can be a lot of pressure. You can put yourself under a lot of pressure, but then, you know, there can be a lot of pressure from external sources as well. But it's just knowing what matters. Mm. You know, for me, my health's my wealth. My family and friends are the key, and that's my way. You know, I want to be happy so that I can be the best version of me, you know, for them and for myself. Mm. But they're, you know, that's what it's all about. And, you know, I take pleasure in the simple things in life. And years ago, I didn't. You know, I chased the highs, and life had to be an exciting adventure. Now give me a cup of tea any day and fluffy socks and cozy pajamas.
And my fluffy socks, look, they're there waiting for me later on. I cannot wait to put them on. So Annette, if people want to follow you or maybe attend a workshop that you have coming up, is there anything in the works?
Yes, well, I do workshops. Kind of cozy, intimate cafe workshops at the minute. I've done a spring and summer and winter series. Mm-hmm. And then we're planning maybe bigger Wellness From Within events in 2020.
And will this be around Ireland?
All around Ireland.
And the UK.
And the UK as well.
Because I have a lot of listeners now. Funnily enough, even though I'm Irish, it's an Irish podcast, more of them are from the UK than not.
Yes, so just keep an eye on my, you know, Instagram and Facebook.
@littlepennythoughts.
Little_penny_thoughts on Instagram. because I lost my password for Little Penny Thoughts on Instagram. So that was back in the day. And then I'm just on Facebook as Little Penny Thoughts.
You have a huge, huge network of people there.
On Facebook, you know, we have maybe 360,000.
Holy shit.
You know, so that just really, you know, and people say Facebook's dead. It's most certainly not.
God, I would have thought it was. I mean, I never log on.
It's very much alive, you know, especially for Little Penny Thoughts over there. That's where, you know, the kind of the worldwide, you know, demographic is. And I love Facebook. Facebook is where we were born as such. And yeah.
And then littlepennythoughts.com.
Littlepennythoughts.com is our website, and that's where we have our merchandise on there.
I need to get the calendar with the date.
The calendar has the quote today. I asked over maybe 300 people for their favourite quote. You know, people I knew and people I admired. And
I hope there's some of your own quotes in there as well, is there?
Well, this was the original.
Okay.
But now our 2020 diary is entitled One Day at a Time. And as I say, the graphic designer and creator was my sister Orla, which is lovely. So it's nice that we're keeping it in the family, and she's so talented in what she does, and she can really bring my vision to life. And I love the concept of taking it one day at a time, and because sometimes we can live in the past and maybe, you know, be so focused on the future that we forget about the present, the here and the now, and that's all.
And I think really that's one of the most important things for managing anxiety, is to take it one day at a time. And you're doing that, and I'm so thrilled to see you feel so well, and that be the driving force of your life, and doing what you love, and minding yourself, and making a difference, which, you know, obviously if we can do that in life, it's such an amazing thing to do. So thank you so much, Annette, for joining me on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast, and for sharing your story. I know it's not always easy to talk about anxiety, but I really appreciate it, and I know that my listeners will too.
Thanks so much for having me, Caroline. Hope to see you soon.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.